Tuesday the 16th of June, Cough Ballad Sivon, from Dr. Sholem Stringer. To function as a Jew, we must live beyond reason.
Good morning, gentlemen. I think it's fair to say, all of us who live in societies as we do, that we would make a claim that our societies run on the basis of systems which are hopefully sensible, logical, reasonable, but overall what we strive for is some sort of consistency. These are the systems that we put together. So for example, if we think about the law in action, the law looks at particular evidence, looks at the facts, and on the basis of facts arrives at a verdict, and that verdict will stimulate the court into action. Criminal justice system, for example, claims to work like that on the basis of the gathering of facts leading to action. Medicine, what do you think a doctor does? He looks at the signs, he looks at the symptoms, looks at the facts, and on the basis of those symptoms will lead to a diagnosis, which hopefully will prompt the right treatment. Science works in a very similar way. Science puts together, collects lots and lots of data, lots of information, looks at patterns, develops a theory. On the basis of that theory, we get technology, if the theory is correct. So what I'm trying to paint is a picture of the sorts of life that we live is within systems which are sensible, logical, and hopefully consistent. Now, of course, we have our own system. We have to look in Mishpatim, and we will see that the system that the Torah spells out for our code of Jewish law and instructions to the Dayanim, instructions about the laws of damages, for example, the laws of theft, compensation, and so many different types of activities in the human domain. The Torah legislates for that, instructs the Dayanim how to behave with that material, and this is the way that the Torah spells out what we would call, you know, reasonable society. Now, most societies have some sort of system. Whether you go to very primitive tribes, more sophisticated nations, every society has a system, the sort that I'm describing. We have our own, of course, special system. And this is what we call it, but I'll leave what we call it for a minute or two until I've told you another story when we're looking at a different society. We're going to look at a society of a colony of porcupines. Now, porcupines are like hedgehogs, but with longer needles, longer spines. And there is a story about this colony of porcupines. One very bitterly cold winter, they were in the forest and they were freezing cold. All the porcupines were shivering. So what they did was they huddled together in order to keep each other warm. You know, bodies huddled together, they can keep each other warm. But being porcupines and having these long needles, they hurt each other, they pricked each other. So they had to spread out again. But when they spread out, they got cold. So they huddled together again, and they pricked each other. And this went on, backwards and forwards, in and out, until they found that there was a certain distance, just far enough that they wouldn't prick each other, and near enough so they could keep each other warm. This distance they called civilization. Because that's what civilization is, isn't it? We can coming up in a couple of weeks' time. That just near enough that we support each other, but far enough we don't get in each other's way, disturb each other. That's the idea. So civilization is what we call it. Now, I will tell you right away that not everybody agrees necessarily that the civilizations that we have set up are all good. When Mahatma Gandhi was asked, what do you think of Western civilization? He said, I think it would be a very good idea. So, you know, it's a matter of point of view. So we've got systems, we've got structure, we've got order. And the idea is, ultimately, living in society, it's to balance competing demands of individuals. We all have different requirements. And it's to balance those demands against society as a whole. Somehow we have to find a modus vivendi, some method or living together as a society and functioning in a productive manner. So that's one side of the coin. Everything's very reasonable, okay. But there is another side of the coin. The Torah tells us that we Yidden have other sorts of requirements, other sort of obligations. They're called chukim. The chukim mean that I have no understanding of how it works. I don't really know why I'm not allowed to wear a jacket containing wool and linen. I don't really know. It's possible that Sefer Chinuch will tell me a reason. And he does. And the latter Achrayim as well, Rosham Shem Fall Hirsch and the Malbim, all offer their reasons as to how the chukim work. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't really know how chukim work. I don't know what is the reason. So on the one hand, we have at the one extreme, what I'll call the Mishvotim type dinim, highly reasonable, fitting into a society which functions beautifully well on the one hand. And at the other extreme, we have the chukim, which I don't understand at all, completely opaque, completely incomprehensible. What I'd like to do, and that's the title of this talk, Beyond Reason, is there's some area in the middle, which is neither at the one extreme, nor at the other extreme. Can't readily understand it, and on the other hand, I can't say it's incomprehensible. Something in the middle. Call it, if you like, a grey area. That's Beyond Reason. This is what I'd like to, this morning, explore a little of what we Yidden are obligated to do in the realm of Beyond Reason. And I'd like to show that a significant proportion of our general practical hashkofa requires us to live in this world, in this in-between world of Beyond Reason. And what I'm going to do now is to focus on two subjects which hopefully will illuminate the idea. The first of my subjects is cause and effect. Sounds very simple. Cause and effect. And when you have cause and effect in the physical world, you have something that triggers off something else. You have cause and effect. Now there are two assumptions that we can make, that we generally make about cause and effect. The first one is that everything we observe in the physical world has a cause. If this stender were to topple over, there would be a cause, there would be a reason. Weakness in one leg or whatever, it's been pushed over. There would be a cause. That's the first assumption we make. When we see the world functioning, there is cause and effect at work here. The other thing is that, and this will sound pretty obvious, that causes precede effects. First comes the cause, then comes the effect. All sounds very obvious. Now let's have a look at this in action. We're going to talk about a little girl who's watching her mother baking a cake. Little girl stands on tiptoes, just can see over the tabletop, as the mother puts the flour and the oil, the fruit, whatever, into a cake, mixes it all up, pops it in the oven, and out comes cake. You ask this little girl about the cause and effect. Simple, she'll say. Because mummy put together all these ingredients, that's the cause. The result, the effect, is cake. Very simple. Cause and effect. Now ask the mother, same question, what's the cause and effect? And we'll get a completely different story. The mother will tell you that she needed some cake. Whatever, needed some cake, wanted some cake in the house. And that means that what was driving this action of baking cake was the need for cake. As a result of that, she needed to put together flour and water and oil, etc., etc. So in other words, looked at it from the mother's point of view, it's quite different. The cause and effect, in fact, are reversed. The cause is the need for cake. The effect of that need for cake is the baking of the cake, the process. So if you look at it at a lower level, a very mundane level, the daughter, process, effect. If you have a look at it from higher level, all of a sudden, the two things reverse each other. Let's just push it a step further to nail the point home. You ask the mother, well, why was there a need for cake? Oh, I should say, the mechatonim are coming. I'm going to give this visit, I've got to hang in the house, but offer them something. Mechatonim are coming. Aha! Now all of a sudden we've shifted it again. From a few months ago, there was a need. Now we know that that need is due to the fact that she's getting a visit. So it's the visit that is the cause, and now all the causes that we had before now become effects. So everything is reversed. Everything is the other way around. What I'm telling you is based on the Beis Halel, Beis Halevi talking about all the subjects of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Achilas Matzah and Moroi, explains to us what we've just gone through in the following way. He says, we are under the impression, we sit down at Seder night, and we're under the impression that it's a very simple process. There was a Shibud Mitzrayim. There was a Yetzias Mitzrayim. And as a result of the Shibud and Yetzias Mitzrayim, we sit down at the Seder and eat Matzah and Moroi, do we not? Cause and effect. Says the Beis Halevi, you couldn't be more wrong. That is not what's going on here. We know, because Chazal tell us, Istakel by Raisa Uboro Alma, which means that the Rabbeinu Shelo Elam looked into the Torah, which preceded the world by 1,000 years or 1,000 generations. The Torah was there a long, long time before Yetzias Mitzrayim, before Shibud Mitzrayim, or anything at all. Istakel by Raisa Uboro Alma. And in that Oiraisa, in that Torah, was a mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. It was there long, long before the event. Avraham Avinu et Matzah. When it came to the 15th of Nisan, he sat down and had a Seder. Et Matzah. This is our tradition. Shibud Mitzrayim hadn't happened yet. The Shibud Mitzrayim, the Tziyas Mitzrayim, there was no hint of it at all at that time. Yet Avraham Avinu et Matzah. So the mitzvah of matzah precedes the Shibud Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's the other way round. So the Rabbeinu Shloilam puts into the Bria the means of presenting us with the cause and effect, Yetzias Mitzrayim, therefore matzah, but it's the other way round. There is a mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. And in order that we have that mitzvah of Achilas Matzah, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a means to understand it on a very low level, that means with the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, etc. Now we understand that we can look at it as a normal cause and effect. But actually, what's actually going on is that it's the other way around. The matzah is the cause. The effect of it is we have a Shibud Mitzrayim and a Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's that way around. Why does this help us? In what way does it bring us forward in our lives? Because the practical application is most interesting. Think of a disaster. Let's have it as neutral disaster so that no one here is affected by this disaster. The sinking of the Titanic. Everybody knows the story. A couple of thousand people boarded this unsinkable ship which sailed off to America, hit an iceberg and sank. Now, as far as we are concerned, we are Ma'aminim. All those people who were on that ship were destined, Al Pi Hashem, to perish on that ship. Every one of those people was meant to be there. So imagine for a moment that you did a survey among those people. You asked the people, well, sir, why are you on this ship? And this man will tell you a story. You see, I've got a business in London, which is failing, and I think I'll have better chances in America. So he'll tell you the story. Well, then you might ask, well, why is your business failing? Well, you see, 2 years ago, I made an investment, and this investment went wrong, and that's why my business failed. Well, how is that you came to a shrewd businessman like you, makes a bad investment? Well, if you go back and back and a story, behind the story, there's another story. You ask each member of this ship, and they'll tell you a story. And behind the story, there's another story. There are thousands of stories about why we are on this ship. Ailing grandmother. Yeah, I'm visiting my grandmother in America. That's why. So everyone's got a different story. And behind that, there's another story. Now, when we look at it as normal cause and effect, we'll say the man's business is failing, therefore he's going to America. No, not necessarily. According to the principle of the Beis Halevi, it's the other way around. You were meant to be on this ship. And behind this intention is a story that your business is failing. And behind the fact that business failed, there is another story, etc. In the words of the Rabbeinu Shloilem, he's arranging millions and millions of different facts, and arranging them in such a way such that there is a conclusion. But the conclusion is the cause. So in other words, our assumption that we started this off, that means that causes come before effects. It's not true. In fact, the cause comes as the end result. The effects are all the things that happen before that come together and converge into the final effect. So that's the way we can actually look at things that happen in the world, disasters, that they are arranged. And if I'm giving the impression that we live in a very deterministic world, we didn't have no past. Of course we do. on the way through that story, through those various stages of that story, our Bechira can be exercised, and the Bechira changes the scenery, changes it in such a way that the story might change. But it's no trouble, no problem for our Kodesh Baruch Hu to juggle all those millions of facts and all the millions of different things that have to come together. No problem. We don't understand the depths of the Rebbeinu Shalom's ability to think out a problem to the end. And the Rebbeinu Shalom can process, we know with the biggest computers these days, can process millions and millions of items of data per second, perhaps per nanosecond nowadays with the biggest computers and parallel computers. But the Rebbeinu Shalom has infinite processing capacity. And he's got a memory stick that will hold everything. So that's no problem for the Rebbeinu Shalom to mash these things around and to rearrange and arrange. No problem for the Rebbeinu Shalom. So we are, therefore, obligated to ignore the facts as presented. It's not a question of process, then cake. It's the other way around. We are meant to rise above it, to look at it at a higher level. When we look at it at a higher level, all of a sudden, causes and effects change around, they change position. And the practical aspect, the practical outcome of thinking in those terms is very, very real for us. Because there are people, some people can live their lives on that basis. Because it has tremendous benefits. Because if we go to a meeting, want to go to a meeting, and for some reason I've done all my shtadlus to get to that meeting on time. I did everything I possibly could, made arrangements for contingency time, etc. And in the end I was stopped from going to that meeting because there was a tremendous traffic jam. One of those, you know, temporary red lights and traffic's piling up everywhere. And I didn't get to my meeting. Well, what you would say is, well, because of the traffic, couldn't get to my meeting. But looked at in this way, when we start using the Hashgofet, which is learned from Beis Halevi, it's all different. I wasn't meant to get to that meeting. That's the end result. That is what the cause is. For whatever reason, the Rebbeinu Shalom didn't want me to get to the meeting. Therefore, there was traffic jam. It's not traffic jam causes me not to the meeting. It's the other way around. Now, when one lives like that, I would say it's easy. Beyond reason, because I see the facts in front of me, and I'm asked to ignore the facts as they are and look at them in another way. But when we live like that, then we are in continuous dialogue with the Rebbeinu Shalom. He and I are talking all the time about what's going on. I see what's going on, and rather than just putting it down to normal cause and effect, I'm saying, Rebbeinu Shalom, you're involved in my life, and I'm involved in such a way that the way I react and the way I respond is going to have an effect. And this is a hashkofa, which, of course, for Yid, is something that we would strive for. Maybe in Derech Melitza, it says, Vayisa Avram as Einov. And when Avram lifted up his eyes, Vayar as Amokha Mirochai. When we lift up our eyes, we look at it at a higher level. Not the little girl, okay, but the mother, but the visit, etc. So if you look at a higher and higher level, all of a sudden, we see the world in a different context. Vayar as Amokha Mirochai, we start seeing vistas and horizons which weren't there before when we look at it like that. So cause and effect is nishposhet. It's beyond reason. So that is my presentation as far as the Ben Odom Lamokim is concerned. I'd like to look at something which is now Ben Odom Lechavera. There is a similar idea going on here, Ben Odom Lechavera, in this realm. So let's have a look at a Gemara in Tanis. Tanis Daf Kaf Aleph. And it tells a story here about a wonderful man, a wonderful doctor he was, a hematologist actually, a bloodletter. His name was Abba Umna, and the Gemara says the following story. Abba Umna hava isle shalma memesivta durokia kol yoima. That this great Abba Umna, this doctor, had a buskoil which said good morning to him every morning. Ula abaya. Now, we're coming into more familiar ground. Abaya, right? The Amora Abaya. He had a baskel as well. Called Malayoy Medeshabata. He had a baskel which said good Shabbos to him every Friday, every Shabbos, every Erev Shabbos. Lerovo, called Malayoy Medekipura. He only had one once a year. I don't know what the baskel says on Erev Kippur, maybe Gemach Sibetayva, something like that. Lerovo, yeah. Kochul Shodate Abaya. Now, Abaya, God Lado, Amoira, hears about this Abba Umna who gets baskol every day, and he only gets one once a week. This is remarkable. I mean, this man is a working man, yeah, this Abba Umna. Tachulsha Data Da Abaya. Abaya is sort of very concerned about this discrepancy. Shimda Abumna, on account of this Abumna story. Omrele, Motsis Miyovit Ku'uvde. And they said to him, sorry, Loi Motsis Miyovit Ku'uvde. His people said, you can't do what he does. What Abumna does is so great, it's so extraordinary that you, Abaya, can't do that. And that's why. My Abumna, what did he do? So the Gemara tells a story to Abumna, to Abba Ovid Milsa, Abba Mochis Gavre. It tells a story which is not necessary for us just at this moment. He would run his surgery in such a way that he would keep men and women apart, make sure that everyone was treated in a very dignified manner, and he would make sure those who couldn't pay in a money box outside, that if you want to pay, you pay, and if you don't want to pay, you don't pay. He didn't want to know who pays and who doesn't pay. And also then, Tamid Chacham came to him and wanted to pay him. Of course, Tamid Chacham wanted to pay. He used to say, I don't want money, I should give you money, you heal yourself. And he was a very, very great son. Anyway, but Abaya wasn't happy. It still didn't quite answer the question as to what it is that Abumna, Grace of course is very nice, wonderful. So, Yoim Echad, Shoda Abaya Zuga, Mr. Bidout, which was just described to you in words, he dispatched two of his bright Talmidim, Lemivdike, to investigate this man. So these two bright students of Abaya turn up at Abumna's door. And it says, Aisivnu, Vachilnu, Vashkinu, he invites them in, and he gives them lovely meals to eat and to drink. And then in the evening, Umachlhu Bistalka Balaila, he gives them very expensive mattresses and blankets, and I tucks them in a very nice room, beautiful guest room. These two students ensconce themselves in Abu Umna's back room. At Safra in the morning, these two chaps get up early. Korachinu Vishoklinu, they fold up and roll up all the blankets and mattresses that they got. And I would say in our language, they scarper. They go, they leave. So a come of anafka l'shuka, and they go off to the market. Then Abumna, a little while later, during the morning, he's walking through the market. We can just picture him, you know, top hat, flaps and tails, walking stick, silver. So he's striding through the market, and all of a sudden he sees Tweedledum, Tweedledee, right? He sees these two people, and they've set up a market stall selling, you guessed it, blankets and mattresses. So he strides up to this stall, and he asks the people about these blankets and mattresses, you know, how much? And they say to him, Amalei l'shai meimah, perhaps the good doctor could give us a price for these. So the Gemara says, Amalei hochi b'hochi, he says, I'll give you a price, this is the price. So they say to him, Amalei v'dilma shavutfei, perhaps they're worth a little bit more. So he says to them, Amalei b'hocha shoklinu, I know how much I paid for them. It's okay. Anyway, it's all up. Yeah, the game's up now. They recognize each other. I know my mattresses, what I see. So they say to him, because of course they're investigating him. Yeah, this is what they're testing him about. Amalei didachninu, they are indeed yours. We took them from you. Amalei, so these two students said to him, b'matusa minach, we beg you. We would like an honest answer from you, Mr. Abumna, Dr. Abumna. B'mai chashtatinam. You must have, some thoughts must have passed through your mind. With what did you suspect us? Here we are, you invited us into your house, we took your mattresses. What did you suspect us of? And this is the answer. And here we get the key to what's going on here. Why this man is such an extraordinary tzaddik. Omalei, Amina, Pidyon Shvuim Mikloi L'Rabbonah. I thought you were on a mercy mission. You were doing Pidyon Shvuim, V'Chsifel Meimali, and you were too embarrassed, you were too abashed to ask me directly for money, so you did it this way. Roll up the mattresses you wanted to sell them to raise money for Pidyon Shvuim. Okay, very interesting. So this man is a person who practices Hevei Don, Makol Odom, Makavskos. He practiced it in a marvelous way. He invented a story for them, and this explained their actions. So it goes in further. We don't need this bit, but it's interesting of how this story ends. And they say to him, all right, you know, they're yours, so take them back. He said, no. I'm not taking it back. I had already fixed in my mind. In other words, he wasn't just paying lip service. He wasn't just saying I wasn't choshedu. He really meant it. To the nth degree, he says, I'm not taking it back. Because now I have designated this property for tzedakah. Once you've designated for tzedakah, I'm not taking it back. There's no way I'm taking this back. So now we have an explanation of what was the schus, what was the merit of this man, Abba Umna, we have this idea of Don Lechav Sus. And it's a very great idea, because in fact this too is beyond reason. It's not reasonable. We see somebody doing something which is not to be described as very good. He's doing something which is loitoiv. Our duty, unless the person has a track record, there are halachas about it, but unless the person has a track record, we see him doing something which is not good, our duty is to reinterpret it in such a way that its outcome is alright. Let's just talk a moment about the difference between a beis din and ourselves. What does a beis din have to do? Yeah, a dayanim, they sit, a beis din, they collect the material, they listen to the evidence, and they've got to judge on the basis of what the facts say. Their dayanus, their verdict has got to be a result of examination of the facts. The facts speak. That's their job. But the dayan, who is, after all, the creme de la creme of society, we choose our dayanim at the best, the brainiest, the most erlich, etc. Our dayanim are very special people, no matter which beis din he belongs to. Very special people. And this dayan, who wouldn't dream of doing anything wrong himself, has got to look at somebody who's telling him all sorts of stories and imagine, or at least consider, the possibility that the man that he's looking at is a liar, is a thief, is a scoundrel. He's got to consider that possibility. If he doesn't consider that possibility, he's not doing his job properly. In other words, the dayan has to lower his standards and consider that what we're looking at is somebody telling me a pack of lies. And people do in Beis Din tell a pack of lies. So he's got to bring down his standards to the level of what might be the Din Torah here. We're not dayan. We're not sitting in judgment on our fellow man. We've got to do the opposite. What we have got to do is to take those facts. We've just seen somebody do something, doesn't look good. Doesn't look good. We have got to take those facts and raise those facts to our level. So whereas the dayan has got to lower his standing for a few moments to imagine that maybe he's dealing with a liar, he's got to lower. Our job is to take those facts that we see, not too good looking at the moment, and raise them to our own level and come out with a story that makes it okay. And this is the chiyuv. Don't ever say that Yiddishkeit doesn't demand originality. Because here is where we have originality. All your originality, all your imagination can be brought to bear. You've just seen somebody do something, doesn't look very good at all, and you are mechuyev to cook up a story, no matter how fanciful, fantastic, improbable, doesn't matter. As long as the outcome is, it's okay. What he's done is alright, it's not an avera. That's our duty, that's our job. So we must be creative in thinking up a story, like Henry Ford said when he brought out his Model T car. He said you can have it in any colour you like, as long as it's black. And similarly here, it doesn't matter how you do those facts, as long as the story that you attach to it has an outcome which is good, which is alright. And that's the point, that's the job, that's what we've got to do. It's got to be favourable. You know, the difference is this, if you like. You see somebody you sort of vaguely know, nice person, and he's got his car jacked up. And he's taking off the wheels. As you're watching that scene, all of a sudden another car screeches to a halt. A rough-looking gentleman leans out of the window and says, "Oi, mate, you take the front wheels and I'll have the back wheels." It wouldn't occur to us, looking at a person jacking out of a car, that he's stealing the wheels. But to the criminal mind, yes, of course it does occur. Our job is always to raise the facts to our own standards. And that, therefore, is very, very often beyond reason. I've got a few minutes left. I'd like to tell you a personal story. You know, sometimes the answer is fairly obvious. Sometimes we look at things and hear things and it doesn't seem good. And actually, if we think a little bit further, we could get the answer, but we don't. A personal story. I sometimes give talks, as I'm doing at the moment. And I'm sometimes invited to Schoenfeld Square to speak to the residents there. And if it's a Yom Tov, then they're not only the residents are there, but they have a lot of visitors. So you tend to get a very full hall with the people, the residents and the visitors. So you give a little Yom Tov talk. And once I was giving a talk, and there was a man at the back, a Chosheva Yid, in fact a Rosh Hashiva. Rosh Shiva that while I was speaking from the front, he kept on talking to his next door neighbor. He was just talking throughout my whole drosha. He was talking. Anyway, I said my piece. When I finished, I said, Yomtiv. They said, Yomtiv. I walked out. End of story. A few days later, I was sitting at a chasana. I sat myself down at the chasana table. And this Rosh Hashiva sat opposite me. He leaned over and said, Reb Shalom, that's lovely. I said, and how would you know? And he said to me, you got it all wrong. The man next to me didn't understand English. And I was interpreting for him. I could have went. You know? So I tell it because it's a personal story. This is what's required. We're required to live in such a way, both in the Ben Adam Lamoka in front, with cause and effect, and Ben Adam Chaveroi in Haveidon Lecholorim Lechavschus, beyond what is reasonable. But that is our obligation. I think we're out of time. Three more minutes. You know, it's not something that should come to us as a great surprise. Because that's the way our story starts. That's how it starts. When the Rabbeinu Shel Olam makes an offer to Avraham Avinu, the Pasuk says that he took him outside and showed him the stars. He says, can you count the stars? You can't count the stars, so your children are going to be. That's how your descendants are going to be, like the stars. And before Shem said, Rashi brings on the spot. Why the stars? Why is the Rabbi Shalom showing Avraham Avinu the stars? And we are told that Avraham Avinu was the foremost astrologer of his day. Astrology means that you can look into the stars and see your destiny. And Avraham Avinu clearly saw that me and my wife Sarah, we're not going to have any children. He saw in the stars. And there is this koyach, apparently. So the Rabbi Shalom takes him out and says, look at the stars. And Rashi says, what he's telling him is, leave your astronomical, your astrological instruments, leave it behind. Come with me. I'm making you an offer. An offer which will change your life. Change your muscle. Completely. And Rav Hirsch explains it very nicely. Malbim does too. The point is this. That we are not free. We are always limited. No matter how strong you are, clever you are, fast you are, it doesn't matter. You'll always come across a barrier. Where you can't be in fast, you can't be in strong, etc. There's a limit to what we can do. There is only one being in this world that is truly free. So what the Rabbeinu Shalom is saying to Avraham Avinu, what you need is an injection of freedom. There's only one way you can get it. When you attach yourself to me, who is truly free, then you will be touched by freedom as well. Hayipolim me'ashem dova. I can do everything. You're 100? No problem. Your wife's 90? No problem at all. She didn't even have the machinery for getting children. No problem at all for Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's the point. That the Rabbi Shalom invites us to be touched by freedom when we join him. When we look at cause and effect. Not just mundane cause and effect. But it's the act of the Rabbi Shalom running, governing, interacting with us. And we interact with him. Our lives all of a sudden change. It's a dialogue that goes on. And Ben Aron Chaveroi, when we treat people as we would want to be treated ourselves, with donach haschus, and go beyond what is just obvious in front of our eyes, go a bit further, one step further, beyond reason, then our human relations are different altogether, and our lives are changed radically.